very special edition of the Rebel Radio Podcast. It's Halloween, people.
Yes.
The creeps and ghouls and ghosts are out. And so we decided to bring you something special on October 31st, 2018. The first ever, I'm not going to call it annual because you never know if next year we'll do another one.
Yeah, it's true.
But the first ever Halloween special episode. And this is not counting our numbers, so it's not episode 117 because we just released 116. It's just a special episode. And as always, this is Mark.
This is Matt.
And we're bringing this to you because we just felt like doing something cool on Halloween
where
the creeps are out and the ghouls and the ghosts and the goblins and the vampires. And we just finished Halloween Horrors Month on the show in which we did some Halloween horror movies. We did The Nightmare Before Christmas, which was just released.
So yeah.
Check that out. We did the fantastic vampire movie, Let the Right One In. We did A Nightmare on Elm Street.
The Nightmare on Elm Street.
Freddy Krueger classic, and directed by Wes Craven. I should say Wes Craven classic. I sounded wrong, Freddy Krueger classic.
Maybe. Yeah.
And then we did the Universal classics, The Wolfman and The Creature from the Black Lagoon. That's a double feature. And we're going to bring it all full circle, talking more Universal monsters today with this special episode. As here in a few moments, we're going to talk Frankenstein meets the Wolfman.
Yes.
Which might be, could be one of the first crossovers ever in history, I think.
It's true. It is definitely the first monster versus monster film, because this predates King Kong versus Godzilla.
So we're going to be talking that in a minute. But it is October 31st here today, and you know, so I know Halloween's a big thing for you, man. You do it all up at the
house.
I do. Projectors. And what makes you love Halloween so much, man?
I've always liked it because, you know, we always got together as a family. You know, my cousins would come over, you know, one Halloween. We'd all go, you know, through the neighborhood, and we'd all pick, you know, a different family member's neighborhood to go through every year, and we'd make a thing of it, and we'd take pictures together, and you know, it was more about like family and togetherness, and
and
getting
Christmas.
A crap ton of candy. Yeah. And so, you know, Halloween, so in a sense Halloween is a lot like Christmas for me. And then, you know, in recent years I had this neighbor that would just, it looked like, you know, okay, every year at, you know, Kroger, Walmart, whatever, they mark down everything that they have left to like where it's like 25% of what it used to cost.
Right.
And, you know, it looks like this lady would just buy up everything and her whole house would be filled with stuff. And she would actually let you walk into her house a little bit and see what she had.
Yeah.
And she had some of the cheaper animatronics that Kroger used to carry before they got a little bit cheaper and they started carrying fewer things. And then she's got like, and I was like, you know, and she's got all these inflatables and stuff, like tons of inflatables, like 7 or 8 of them. And I'm like, you know, I can do better than that. I can outdo that woman. And so I was like, what if we just made the house scary? And so it started with, you know, me just playing like, you know, scary sounds through the, sounded like stuff that came out of different horror movies, like chains and beasts growling. I had these, this thing with sensors hooked up to where it would shake the bushes if the kids walked too close to it. Fog, you know, like 2 or 3 fog machines at least every year, tons of strobes. And then these past couple of years I've added atmosphere effects, digital decorations, which I showed you the other day. And they're pretty scary. They scare the kids pretty well. The teenagers think they're cool. And, you know, of course, it scares all the toddlers away. And so it's really fun. No one wants to come up to the house. It's great.
That sounds cool. You need to take some pictures tonight. So
yes.
We can put it on our Rebel Radio Instagram.
We will. I will.
But, Halloween is something that as a kid I always enjoyed. And then I think I got away from it for a while. But now that I have kids, I'm enjoying it again. I do like taking the kids out. Except last year when it was game 6 of the World Series. I kind of didn't want to go out.
You know,
but this year, we don't have to worry about that. But, you know, I do enjoy taking the kids. And I think I'm embracing more Halloween and horror as I get older. Like, this month, doing these movies is really kind of, I've enjoyed it, really. And, and you know me, man, I'm not a big horror guy. But I found myself, like, kind of appreciating it more and getting kind of back into it. And I've watched horror movies.
There's an art to it.
I've watched horror movies over the years, and I'm still not going to be one that's going to go watch like Hostel and things like that.
Yeah,
I don't really like the overly violent torture porn, but I can appreciate a really well thought out horror film that's well done. And I think the movies we've done have made me appreciate that. I love these Universal classics, stuff like good slasher flicks that have a certain, I don't want to say charm to them, but a certain
faux pas.
Yeah.
Or whatever.
Okay, whatever that
insert
means.
French phrase here.
Yeah, you know, they have a certain thing to them that makes them watchable, even if you realize it's, at times they're really bad. You know, and and things like that. And of course, John Carpenter, he's a classic, and I've got to watch. I'm going to try to maybe watch Halloween tonight, so this is Halloween. And I told my friend Naomi I'd watch it. And so, you know, I think Halloween's a good, fun holiday, and kids really enjoy it. Kids get a kick out of dressing up and being their favorite characters and everything.
And for every person, I hate to be, like, Frankish, because Frank always has to, you know, tell us the bad stuff about something, you know, whenever he's here sometimes. God bless his heart. you know, sometimes, you know, for every person that enjoys Halloween, there's a person that's going to tell you that you are worshiping Satan right now.
Oh, you know.
Because, and I was, my mother-in-law sent me a video of some guy saying, and this was one of the first things he said, is that pumpkin is Santeria. So when you put a pumpkin in your house, that's bringing the devil in your house. And I'm like, did this man, I messaged her back, did this man just say that a vegetable brought the devil in my house? And I'm like, are you serious right now? She didn't say anything back.
I know people that don't celebrate Halloween because they think it's evil and the devil and God says you shouldn't do it. It's absolutely ridiculous, you know, because the whole ideas of Halloween go back to the Spanish holidays of celebrating your dead and things like
that. Yeah, ours is way different than, you know, it's kind of like a mix of, you know, like you said, in Mexico, Spanish, in Spain, whenever they celebrate their dead. And then, you know, it's a little bit of the Celtic way, right, which, you know, is the people who created Halloween.
Right.
You know, and yes, we do call them pagans because they were godless, and they just, you know, they didn't really believe in gods or, you know, or really any religion, but they believed on, you know, the night of the 31st, the realm between the living and the dead was at its thinnest, and that good spirits and evil spirits alike were able to pass among the living. So in order to protect themselves from evil spirits, they dressed as evil spirits so that they would be passed over. And, you know, it was a way of protecting themselves. So it was in no way of worshiping the devil. I mean, obviously, you know, you believe what you want. I'll believe, you know, what I want to believe. And, you know, I'm not going to let a YouTube video tell me what to believe. You know, if that's what it's come to, then, you know, I'm very sad. But, you know, yeah, to each their own, man. If that's what you want to believe, that's fine. But this is what it was based off of. Yeah. This is the source. So, and that's what I look at.
Exactly. Exactly. Believe what you want to believe. To me, it's okay to go out and have fun, dress up as superheroes, vampires, werewolves, whatever they want to dress up. I know your kids are being, one of them anyway, right? Jake is being
Jason.
Jason Voorhees. Yes. A lot of people might frown upon that, a kid being Jason Voorhees. But, you know, whatever. And as long as you teach them the right things at the end of the day and they have good hearts and they're raised right. And I know you're a good dad and I'm not worried about your kids.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm worried more about you.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
And my boys are going to be Spider-Man and Wyatt Spider-Man and Michael's going to be Han Solo tonight.
There we go.
And Waverly's going to be the cutest Tinkerbell you've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, it should be fun. That's cute. And you're going as Leatherface.
Which, yes.
Of course, you put on our Rebel Radio podcast Facebook group. You have a video of you being ridiculous in it.
Yes, of course. You know, usually I'm not caught on camera being ridiculous. This time I was, and I was like, you know what? Let's just let everyone know that I am ridiculous if they didn't already think so.
I got a doggy, though, man. That Leatherface suit brings out the dad bod.
It does bring out the dad bod.
Matt's a, you know,
but
fat
hey,
motherfucker. I'm just kidding.
Oh, man. I'm going to die over here. I can take the heat. In my defense, Leatherface is probably one of the more heavier guys.
I know.
In fact, whenever I forget the new Leatherface guy, the same model that, some creepy dude, the same guy that, you know, the Thorskin podcast guys used as their image of Leatherface. Everyone likes that one. But he had to eat a diet of bread and brisket and beans and beer so that he could gain up to he could get his weight up to 300 pounds. So he could play Leatherface. Yeah, so Leatherface has always been a heavier set guy. I'm glad I don't weigh that much. I feel like, you know, I'm a hop, skip, and a jump away, you know, because I like Whataburger, I like tacos, and I did go running last week, but my legs have forgotten what 3 miles were. You know, I haven't been a runner in a while, so it hurt me for a bit. But let's see if after the holidays I can get back into looking like Freddy shape, you know.
And it's funny you mentioned that some creepy dude played Leatherface. What is it about, like, a lot of the actors that play these slashers, kind of, I guess to bring out that role, you kind of have to have a dark side. Like, Robert Englund is a little odd.
Yeah, he
over
is.
Over the years, even though I've heard he's also very nice. Who was it that played? Was it Kane Hodder who played Jason?
Yeah, they had a lot of people that passed by and played Jason.
Yeah, but Kane Hodder's probably the most well-known.
Yeah.
He was definitely kind of scary.
Yeah, you know? He looked creepy.
And it makes you wonder if sometimes they played that part when they were visiting fans and stuff. Were they just trying to keep an image of being, you know, kind of scary and creepy?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
The guy who played Michael Myers just looked like an old dude.
Yeah,
some old dude.
And he's still, and he's cut. That dude,
yeah,
for an old guy,
he's for like, an old dude, yeah,
he's like Stephen Lang cut, you know,
Stephen
like,
Lang,
kick your ass,
yeah.
So you know, but Halloween, man, it's a really fun holiday for a lot of people across the world. They really enjoy it, and it brings out and the best. And just remember, be safe out there tonight, and you know the old adage that's inspect your candy, which is so bizarre because really that's very very rare.
Yeah,
you know, it all goes back to the story that happened here in Houston, Texas, but we don't want to talk about that because it's really creepy.
Yeah,
but that
creepy.
Really actually is very rare. You know, if you really follow the news reports, there's very few cases of bad candy ever happening.
Yeah.
You know, occasional needle here and there, but it's actually a lot rarer than people think.
Yeah.
So, but either way, be safe tonight out there, people. And so let's talk about this movie we're going to do to close out our Halloween Horrors Month on this Halloween special. And we felt like making it come full circle and doing another Universal classic. And maybe a movie that's not as good as the two we did double feature, but it's still got its moments. And we're doing...
Yeah, it has its moments.
Yeah, we're going to do 19... Is it 41's?
43? I want to say it's 43.
Yeah, 43. You're right, because Wolfman was 41.
Yeah.
And this is the first direct sequel to The Wolfman, and this is Frankenstein meets The Wolfman. And there had been some Frankenstein sequels at this point already. So,
yeah.
But they hadn't done a sequel to The Wolfman, and Universal really wanted to see, hey, we want to bring it back, because it was really popular, did really well at the box office for them. So they had this idea of doing crossing over the monsters and creating a universe, so they came up with a script idea of having Frankenstein and the Wolfman meet in the sequel.
Yeah, and it looks like they use the Wolfman storyline to start off with. Mm-hmm. And so the person that was a grave digger in the Wolfman is now a grave robber. And so they go to rob the grave of Chaney's character,
Larry Talbot.
And wouldn't you know it, they do it on a full moon night. And as soon as that moonlight hits him, it doesn't take long for Talbot to wake back up and become the Wolfman again.
Yeah.
And, you know, the lamp falls on the ground, and I was like, oh, another lamp falling on the ground, just like in Creature of the Black Lagoon. And then, you know, Larry wakes up, and an English cop, you know, is waking him up, saying, you know, hey, you know, let's get him some help. They get him to a hospital.
Because he has the bad head wound.
He has the bad head wound.
At the end of The Wolfman.
Yeah. And they're like, where'd you get that fracture on your head? And he's like, I don't know. What's your name? Larry Talbot. I live in this village. I forget which village it is. Mm-hmm. So they call the village. He's dead. And so, you know.
For
they,
almost 4 years.
Yeah. And so they think he's crazy. And then he becomes the Wolfman, and that's how he escapes.
Right.
His straitjacket, right? Isn't that? And
or his hospital restraints.
Yeah. His hospital restraints. And so he ends up finding the woman that helped him in the first one, the gypsy lady.
Well, he seeks her out. Because remember,
he
realizes after he kills, he wakes up and it's a Wolfman. And you could tell Universal had more money to spend on this.
Because
they do the Wolfman transformation like 3 times this movie. And his makeup looks better.
It does look better.
It looks cooler. So they had more money to spend. And he wakes up and he kills this cop. And in the next day,
he
openly admits to it. He goes, I probably did it, because he knows I'm cursed. And they don't believe him that he's cursed by the wolf and everything. And he comes to terms with, he realizes, wow, I can't die. And even he can be held back by the wolf's mane and being buried with it and protected from the full moon. But he can't actually die. So this goes back to Talbot's obsession in the first movie, where he was had his...
You know, where he kept thinking that he had the dreams,
right.
Thinking he killed somebody, and then they're like, oh, it's in your head. And so, you know, that theme comes back. They do think that it's all in his head.
Right. And but he's accepted it now at this point that he has. But he wants to be rid of it. He realizes it's a curse, and he wants to do anything he can die. So he finds the gypsy woman from the first one and asks her, what can I do? And she tells him, I might know somebody.
Yeah, instead of, you figure she would just pull out a revolver with a silver bullet and say, see, that the end.
That would be too easy.
Yeah, it'd be too easy. So she knows, she says that there's this doc, I don't think she uses doc, the name Dr. Frankenstein at first.
That, yeah.
But, and then they ride out, which the horse riding scene is kind of weird looking until that it's a moving picture in the background. But they get to town, and, you know, at the mention of Frankenstein's name, they're like, you know, oh, it's like, don't mention that name here. You know, we burned his house to the ground. And so, you know, they, yeah, it's kind of, what Frankenstein are they based off? Is this Ludwig Frankenstein, or is this the Frankenstein before that? It doesn't really tell you. I guess they're going off a Ghost of Frankenstein.
And yeah, and it was because of the deleted scenes. They initially meant this as a sequel to the Ghost of Frankenstein.
Okay.
So at this point, Frankenstein had Yegor's brain put into him.
Yes.
But it didn't, so he could speak.
Yeah, so he could speak.
But yet they delete a lot of those scenes out of the film. In fact, you can see Frankenstein's mouth moving a couple times, but the words are, the audio is taken out of the film.
Yeah.
So a lot of it goes back to deleted scenes that they never finished the film properly because they didn't want, they wanted to go back. And this movie is directly where the idea of Frankenstein being a walking, just making no noise.
Yeah, the Lugosi Frankenstein. Yeah. It's funny because Lugosi, he, you know, it's funny, and whenever people imitate Dracula, it's the Lugosi Dracula. Mm-hmm. And then when people imitate Frankenstein, it's the Lugosi Frankenstein. We stick our arms out. You know, it's like, I even, you know, I had done a naughty Frankenstein, you know, a couple times with my wife. Me do things to you.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah, yeah. And I then, just get pushed away.
And Lugosi's actually only in this about 5 or 6 minutes.
Yeah.
They actually use a stunt double for a lot of scenes in this.
Yeah, for a lot of scenes.
Because Lugosi didn't really want to do it. At this point in the history of Universal Horror, they had kind of started treating Lugosi as a has-been star by this point, and he wanted more money, and he was, and this goes back to his brief cameo in The Wolfman as being kind of a grumpy guy. He wanted to be the lead in The Wolfman. They said no, he went Lon Chaney, and he ended up getting a subpart. And that's kind of where the relationship with Universal Pictures started going sour a little bit. So Lugosi did this because he was contractually obliged, but he's only in it very few minutes of the movie.
Yeah, and so they confess to Talbot when I, you know, while he's inquiring about Frankenstein, that they burned him and his house down.
Right.
And so, you know, of course, if you remember, the monster burned down.
Right.
Ludwig Frankenstein burned down with it, and then it moves to this festival scene, which is very, you know, it's very Raise Your Beer. It's like a Raise Your Beer song. It's just weird.
Yeah,
a very weird song.
I felt it was like really kind of out of place all of a sudden in the movie.
Yeah, it's like I thought something had changed and I was watching a different film.
Exactly. The first 35 minutes of this movie or so are really well shot. It's got the atmosphere of a Universal. The plot is flowing good. It all makes sense, okay? Larry Talbot wants to die. He's going to seek out Dr. Frankenstein, or once he finds out that Dr. Frankenstein is no longer alive, he wants to go to the estate and try to buy the estate so he can find the paperwork and all that. And that's when he meets Dr. Frankenstein's daughter, and he has a dinner, and they're invited to this festival where he goes to, and then all of a sudden the song breaks out, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, what's going on?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then so, Talbot gets all pissed off because I guess the song is about never dying and living eternally, and he's like, stop! I don't want to live! I don't want to live forever! And so he shoos them off. And who comes up? Dr. Frank. You'd figure that they would think of a different name for the doctor, like Dr. Ickelstein or some kind of Stein. But nope, they went with Dr. Frank. I guess they're like, oh, let's just cut off the Stein. Just use Dr. Frank. And so he talks about how Dr. Frankenstein had the secrets to death, life, but also death. And they go to the castle. Which the castle at the beginning of the Ghost of Frankenstein was destroyed, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I want to say it was. So there's some continuity issues here.
Yeah.
But, you know, then Frankenstein is found in the ice, even though he burned down. Somehow he's in the ice.
Right.
So they get him out and, you know, and so he starts walking around.
And somehow the Frankenstein, they had made him out to be like this brutish monster, but yet he doesn't try to hurt Talbot.
No, he's just walking around.
He just walks around, follows him, and this is where the dialogue cutscenes, I guess, come out, because Frankenstein, at this point, is able to talk, but then I guess they took out the dialogue because he's supposed to be blind and deaf.
Yeah.
It's weird, yeah.
Yeah, he was able to talk. Now he's not able to talk. He just kind of groans. And then the reason, you know, he would walk with his arms out is because he's blind, but now he's blind and deaf. And, you know, maybe the you know, there was more damage done to him, but we're not really told. So they escape, that he follows them back into town, right?
Well, they go back to the castle first, and he asks Frankenstein's monster to find the paper form.
That's right.
But even Frankenstein, he just sort of mumbles around, pulls stuff out, and they can't find anything.
Yeah, and he finds the chest, and he's pulling papers out, can't find nothing. And so, yeah, he follows them back into town, and then they have to run again because the townspeople are freaked out. So Frankenstein kind of just hops on the back of this carriage. I guess they're beer drums.
Yeah.
And so he just starts throwing beer drums off like he's Donkey Kong or something at the crowd. And then they escape back to the castle. And I guess Dr. Frank is going to help them. He's going to help him die.
Right.
But he
becomes power obsessed.
Yeah, because so instead of just draining both of their life forces, it's like he drains the Wolfman's, he drains Talbot's life force into the monster to power up the monster. He becomes obsessed now with getting the monster to full strength. I must see him at full strength.
Right.
And so, but wouldn't you know it, he does this during a full moon. And right. So while the life force is pulled from Talbot and the monster gets free and just goes on like a freaking roid rage and throws Dr. Frank like against the wall,
right.
Throws him again. Talbot starts transforming and eventually breaks free after, you know, Frankenstein grabs Miss Frankenstein.
Elsa.
Yeah, Elsa, yeah. Frankenstein. And so they start fighting. But it's not really long. I mean, they fight for a little bit.
Like 2 or 3 minutes.
Yeah, and so Dr. Frank and Miss Frankenstein escape. And then one of the townsfolk has, you know, come up with a plan to blow the dam and wash out the monsters.
Right.
And so the dam explodes.
It all happens very quickly.
Yeah, it all happens very quickly. I mean, I know we're talking like the end is going really quickly, but this is how it goes. Yeah. I mean, the dam explodes.
The flood comes in.
The flood comes in, and then the castle comes down. And then they're just, you know, from Miss Frankenstein and Dr. Frank are up there standing on the ledge, and that's, you know, it's the end. And then they say the end.
The monsters are assumingly
dead. So it just looks like they die.
Right.
Not sure if they really do, because look, you know, Frankenstein was supposedly, you know, burned to the ground. There he was in the ice.
Right.
And we know what follows after this. So we know that they don't really die. Yeah.
And what's funny is you said there was a lot of full moons in a short time in this movie. And as most people know about lunar cycles, full moons are about every, 35 to 45 days. I could be totally wrong on my science there. But so this movie takes place what seemingly is over just a few weeks, but yet there's a lot of full moons. But yeah, he does travel some. So I guess in travel time.
Yeah, maybe.
But it's still a little bit of a reach. But you know, this is a fun movie. It's not the best Universal movie. But it's enjoyable. And it starts off really well. It just gets weird in the last 30, 40 minutes. Maybe they weren't sure how to bring the monsters together and make them fight. I wish they would have fought a little bit more.
Yeah, because it is just like a little tussle.
Yeah.
That's it. It's like, it's not really a fight.
No, but overall, it still goes down as a Universal classic because it's the first time any of their two monsters met. It created a continuity, and they went on to do other movies where some of the creatures clashed and met each other and things.
Yeah, and then they, you know, she, even though Elsa is a Frankenstein, we're not told which who she's the daughter of, but I think it's safe to assume she's Ludwig Frankenstein's daughter.
Right.
The police chief, I believe, was in the previous two Frankenstein movies, and then he's also in this one, so that creates continuity. And of course, they connect a lot of the former characters from the Wolfman. So
right.
There is some continuity
in
here.
And as a direct sequel of the Wolfman, it works pretty well on that level.
It does. You know? If you just watch the Wolfman and then you watch this, you know, and you kind of,
It's more the Frankenstein continuity. It's a little off because it's kind of weird. And then, like, I guess the original script for this even had Bride of Frankenstein appearing in it, but that was cut from the film, too. You know, in Universal, and we talked about this on the Creature from the Black Lagoon episode, they weren't real good at keeping their archives.
Yeah.
So a lot of the footage that was shot, a lot of the behind-the-scenes photos of this stuff doesn't exist anymore. There's a few photos out there of Bela Lugosi sitting on set and Lon Chaney and things like that. But Universal was not real good about archiving their things. Like, they thought they had found deleted scene prints at one point of a lot of their movies. It turned out not to be. Photos of certain things, and there's a few moments, but a lot of stuff got lost, unfortunately, over the years. So there, because there was more stuff shot for this film, but about 6 or 7 minutes, they believe, but was never found. So it's interesting to think that Universal and their legacy was not able to keep some of this stuff and make better archives of these films.
Yeah, compared to what we have today, I mean, there's behind the set scenes all, you know, for every film, and they're usually released before teaser trailers are. But, you know, I guess it's just a different time in filmmaking.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe they didn't feel like it was necessary.
And it was more of a go-get-em attitude back then. You had to get the movie out. Hollywood was booming. There was competition everywhere.
Yeah.
These things were shot very quickly, 30 to 40 days, get them out in theaters, because if you fell behind another studio, you might lose that actor, you might lose that idea.
Mm-hmm.
And things were very, it was a run-and-gun competition back then.
Yeah, that's fair.
To get the movies out quickly. And a bit of trivia for you on this. You know, a lot of people believe that Dr. Frankenstein had a hunchback assistant named Igor. Is that true?
No.
No.
If you look at Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, which was the person who created Frankenstein.
Right. The whole idea of Frankenstein was Igor.
Yeah.
The idea of Igor with a hunchback actually comes from the Young Frankenstein film.
Really?
And a lot of people remember that because it's so recent.
He's funny.
He's got a hunchback. His name is Igor. But in the original Universal films and Mary Shelley's, there was no hunchback named Igor.
Wasn't your limp on the other leg?
Right. But people always seem to remember that. But Universal has quite a legacy going back to as early as 1925, whenever they filmed the Family Opera movie, which is interesting because, you know, they filmed the Family Opera and they didn't like it. They thought it was terrible.
So
they hired another director, reshot most of the movie, and they still didn't like it. So a lot of people don't know this. The original Family Opera film is actually pieces of both movies put together. To put the film together, and it ended up coming out okay. And today it's regarded as a classic, and a lot of people believe it's the kickoff for the Universal monster movies. But Dracula gets more credit, you know, coming out in Phantom of the Opera in 1925. Dracula comes out in 1931,
mm-hmm.
and of course it's a classic. And to this day, it's still the standard by which vampire movies and a lot of monster movies are held to. And it kicked off this legacy that went on into the 50s for Universal Monsters.
Yeah, speaking of Mary Shelley, I forget who the other two people that she had written, that she had this contest with. But the whole idea, the basis of these monsters that were created were based off of these writers way, way back. I mean, Mary Shelley, Lord Byron. And then there were two others, and I think Lord Byron came up with Dracula. I think Byron came up with Dracula, and it was more of a romanticism.
Right.
And then Mary Shelley came up with Frankenstein. And if you've ever read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, it's very good. In fact, there's a movie with Robert De Niro as the monster that's probably the best adaptation to the novel.
Right.
You know, where he just, you know, he's trying, you know, he gets people's amniotic fluid, you know, from people having, women having babies, and it's weird to see Robert De Niro in that role.
Right.
But it's a very good movie, it's probably the most accurate. But this is the one that this is the Frankenstein everyone remembers because it's the most commercialized. It's the most vernacular, I guess. Most that we've seen. You know, we had never really saw a lot of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein advertised. So if you get a chance and you're able to watch it, that's something that I would definitely watch. I think some of us, depending on what year you graduated from high school, you actually, this is part of your curriculum to watch, to read Mary Shelley's Frankenstein. And so hopefully you're able to do that and you know what I'm talking about. But Universal monster movies, they're still pretty good. They brought us the Monster Squad eventually.
Right.
Not the same actors, obviously, no. but basically, you know,
ideas of it.
And, you know, it's a shame that, you know, some of the things didn't go our way and we're not really seeing that, you know, in development today.
Right.
Or is Russell Crowe's film
I think
still
it's pretty much dead?
The dead.
Because they were going to make a Bride of Frankenstein remake. And of course, Bride of Frankenstein is regarded as one of the greatest sequels ever made. You know, surpasses the original. It's right up there with Empire Strikes Back and other great sequels of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And, but it seems like it's dead. You know, back in 1980-81, John Carpenter almost remade The Creature from the Black Lagoon because of his success of Halloween.
Oh, yeah.
And everything.
Yeah, Halloween.
And then it kind of went under the table, and then they gave him a chance with Memoirs of the Invisible Man, and they were going to let him do Creature from the Black Lagoon if it was a success, but it wasn't a success, so mm-hmm. it never got made. Of course, we had The Mummy done by Brandon Fraser's films, which were okay received, you know, yeah. a lot of money. We had Tom Cruise's Mummy last year, which did not do well. And unfortunately, these characters haven't been able to get back off the ground. But then we have movies like The Shape of Water, which are inspired by these characters, obviously very, very much inspired. And that's it's a wonderful, great movie. And it's a shame that we can't get continued legacy of these characters, because they go back almost 100 years now. We've had these characters as part of our cinematic culture. And they made some really good stuff. And there's a lot of unknown universal monsters, like the mutant from... the alien mutant.
I know what you're talking about.
I had the movie too, and I lost what it was called. But you know, to the Wolfman, to the Phantom of the Opera, to the Invisible Man, so many creatures. A lot of people forget the last Universal movie was called The Leech Woman, which is regarded as the last final movie they ever made, and it was like in 1955. Not the last movie Universal ever made, but the last movie in their monster culture. But you're talking almost 30 years of movies they were doing these creature features. And they went on to make more sci-fi stuff in the 50s, and as we saw in The Creature of the Black Lagoon,
mm-hmm.
which was more creature with a side of sci-fi, you know, being that maybe nuclear waste or other things cause these creatures to come to our planet.
Yeah.
And there's so much history here behind this and ideas that would translate well to today's film world if you can get the right directors and right writers to bring these back and go back to what makes them work, which is good storytelling. And make it about the characters that become these creatures or are these creatures.
Yeah, and not about fight scenes and stuff like that and explosions.
Yeah, and you know, our legacy goes back to today's movies. If you don't have these films out today, like you don't have, and I'll argue even with slasher films, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween, things like that, you don't have these movies if you don't have these Universal films that they gave us in the 1930s and 40s.
That's true.
And what a time it would have been to be alive in that golden age of Hollywood to see these films on the big screen and walk in and just, you know, we take things for granted now. We walk in and we watch Thanos come to life on the big screen or Batman. But for their times in a world coming out of the Great Depression and things like that, it had to be quite remarkable to see Lon Chaney changing to a Wolfman on the screen. Or Dr. Frankenstein yelling, "It's alive!" and bringing the Frankenstein creature to life. And our kids and people today will never know that sense of wonder that these films had in the 30s and 40s.
Yeah. Compared to what we have now, we forget where we came from because, you know, we just weren't there to experience it. But yeah, movies have come a long way, and it's funny to see what, you know, what was a popular formula then. Might not be such a popular formula now just because of what we expect whenever we you know, buy a ticket and sit down and pay for that $20 bucket of popcorn. You know, it's like we want to see special effects. We want to see fights, big guys, you know, Hulk and Thanos going at it. And, you know, here it's, like you said, it's all about the story. It's all about the characters.
Right. But at the same time, if you were to reboot the Universal Monsters in today's world, I think Guillermo del Toro, especially The Shape of Water, showed that if you take the time to really develop the characters, and let's take the Wolfman, for instance, you could build that story. You could have Larry Talbot come to town and build that story. You don't have to have the Wolfman in the first 15 minutes. Where, like, mm-hmm. in The Mummy, they were so quick to get to The Mummy early in that film and not really develop it. Then they had this whole weird subplot where Tom Cruise's character gets cursed by the mummy, and he comes back to life somehow. It didn't make any sense. I wasn't even sure what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And I know in the original Mummy storyline, there is some of that where I guess there's a character that gets brought back to life in the same character Tom Cruise played. It was weird. I didn't really know what was going on. And I think that Universal really needs to look at what made these movies work. And I think they shouldn't give up on Dark Universe, but maybe take the time and take a couple of years to really develop it and maybe not try to make a universe out of it. Just mm-hmm. make two or three really good individual films. There's a Netflix show now about Frankenstein, which I've heard is really good with Sean Bean in it. And it's doing well. So the characters are there. You can do these things and bring them back and make really good movies. And so hopefully one day that happens. Do you have any ideas? What do you think if Universal should do? Kind of the same thing? Or any? You have any ideas? And what would you like to see? What would be your first movie to kick off a Universal reboot?
Man, you know, I think the first thing to do would be to, you know, kind of like the what Paramount, you know, kind of did with the Marvel Universe. I think first they say that The Shape of Water is canon, and they build off of it.
Right.
I think that's the first thing you do.
Was it a different studio, though?
It's a different studio, but I think you work out something where you can borrow the rights or buy them to the character.
That's a bold move.
And use that to jumpstart your universe and tie it into it to something.
I also think that you could do it with Dracula. You know, you did Dracula Untold, which was supposed to be kind of your non-official kickoff to the universe. But maybe do Dracula, the most popular character, and make it a romanticized Dracula. Make it the Dracula that made him popular in the first place, not a Dracula that's flying around everywhere, fighting other armies. You know, we don't need to see everything with Vlad the Impaler and all that. Maybe make it go back to what Dracula works.
Yeah, that Bram Stoker started off with Dracula the right way, but you know, probably not follow through with it the way Bram Stoker's did, and then you know maybe make it a little bit more today without the sparkles and no Twilight stuff. It's got to be old school, but with a little new school, a little bit of new school. But I'd say, Dracula is probably popular. Vampire movies, I don't think they do bad in the theater. So that's probably a safe bet if you're going to start off. And then maybe you tease another monster at the end and do like the whole Marvel route. But maybe no after credit stuff, so it's not too painfully obvious. Right. But you know, maybe at the end,
movie and play off from it. And what director? I mean, obviously Universal already kind of told Guillermo no. That's why he went on to make A Shape of Water. But I wonder if there's another director we're not thinking of out there that could pull off and start this films off properly. You know, I wonder who that. I'm trying to think off the top of my head. I mean, I don't think you necessarily need someone super popular. You don't need a Steven Spielberg or a David Fincher. But there's got to be someone out. You know,
Host Fincher was who I was thinking of.
Who was it? Rupert Wyatt, who made The Rise of Planet of the Apes. And, you know, maybe somebody like that, an unknown, but maybe has a good vision. You know, somebody in that line.
Yeah.
Maybe Drew Goddard, you know, who made The Cabin in the Woods and stuff. Maybe somebody like him to bring him in.
I like The Cabin in the Woods.
And who has an eye for horror and something like that. There's guys out there that could do it.
And I think you saying an eye for horror, I think that's a, you know, a good point. You have to have an eye for horror.
Yeah.
There is an art to it, and I think some people have it, some people get it, and some people don't.
Yeah.
You know, that's why we have such a scattershot of movies out there. Some that are really good, and some that are just horrible.
Right.
And you're just like, oh, look at all this blood in this movie. And you're like, that doesn't make a horror movie.
Yeah, that's true. So you know, but Universal Pictures and Universal Monsters, I think, will rise again. Pun intended.
We'll rise again.
I think these characters are too popular, and they survived the test of time 100 years later, almost in cinema, to not come back to theaters in some way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I hope it's sooner than later.
Hopefully.
While we're still alive.
So we can see them.
Because I would love to see them properly done with today's technology, and I still will always love these original films. And so we hope you enjoyed talking Universal Monster, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, and any final thoughts on the Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman and Universal Classics?
No, it's a solid monster versus monster movie. It's not the best film in the monster universe probably, but it's the first one where we got to see two monsters square off.
Yeah.
And it predates, like I said before, it predates Godzilla versus
the first
Hong
cinematic
Kong.
Universe in some ways.
Yeah, the first cinematic universe really. It was Marvel before Marvel was Marvel.
Right.
You know?
You can argue that without these movies, we don't have Freddy Krueger, we might not have the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's true.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But you know, we had fun. This was a fun episode.
This was fun.
Bringing you a Halloween special. As always, you know, of course, go to the RebelRadioPodcast.com for all episodes, and to subscribe to us on all apps and leave us a review on iTunes and everything else. And go listen to our latest episode we just put out, The Nightmare Before Christmas. That was a good one. We had fun talking about too. And we will have a new episode next week in which we're talking the Alex Proyas directed Dark City, as we get away from Halloween and get back into some good cult fun classics and fun movies we're going to be talking about over the next couple of months on the show as we get into 2019. And also stay tuned when we're done talking. I'm throwing some classic trailers at the end of this episode, some monster movie trailers. So a few minutes of trailers to get you in that Halloween spirit tonight.
Yes.
As you go out and trick-or-treat. And as always, be safe. And as always, thank you for listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. We can never thank you guys enough.
Yes, thank you.
For the support you give just to listen to an episode. And we really hope you enjoyed our first ever Halloween special. And we enjoy bringing it to you. So thanks, as always, for listening. And this has been Mark.
This has been Matt.
And as always, just
go there and do it.
This is James O'Barr on Rebel Radio. Thanks for listening.
The one, the only, the classic Halloween. Halloween night. A small American town. 15 years ago. Michael? Halloween.
I spent 8 years trying to reach him, and then another 7 trying to keep him locked up because I realized that what was living behind that boy's eyes was purely and simply evil. I think he'll come back.
Exploring uncharted territory.
And totally charted.
Just talk.
Sure, sure.
The only reason she babysits is to have a...
Halloween.
Okay, come on out.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.
I am Dracula.
A moment ago, I stumbled upon a most amazing phenomenon. Something so incredible, I mistrust my own judgment. Look.
Dracula. The very mention of the name brings to mind things so evil, so fantastic, so degrading. You wonder if it isn't all a dream, a nightmare.
Rats. Thousands. Millions of them.
But no, this is no dream. This is Dracula, the original terrifying story of a maniac and a man who lived after death, lived on human blood, took the form of a vampire bat, and lured innocent girls to a fate truly worse than death.
Dracula? Oh, what's he done to you, dear? Tell me.
He came to me. He opened a vein in his arm, and he made me drink.
Hey, this is Marky Ramone, and you're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast.
You know who to call when you have ghosts. But who do you call when you have monsters?
We're the Monster Squad.
What's a squad?
It's like Miami Vice, I think.
They're young and inexperienced.
Naughty virgin.
They're a bit disorganized.
Monsters are not real.
We don't know that, sir.
2,000-year-old dead guys do not get up and walk away by themselves.
But when strange things start happening in town...
There's a monster in my closet.
Ooh, look at that big, scary monster!
What's happening? You wait till the werewolf.
Silver bullet?
They're the only ones ready to do battle.
Somebody's out there and is killing people. And if it's monsters, nobody's gonna do a thing about it but us.
Soon the creatures of the night shall rule the world.
Real monsters? Us? Midnight in the world, remember? Maybe we can be like Mask Squad and Stygia. Two mask bombs.
We got a 1035. Stick back up. Hurry up.
A miniature squad. The book is right. Don't you see it's all true?
By midnight.
You guys.
They won't seem so young anymore. Monster Squad.
Wolfman's got me.
Ha 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 ha!